playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the all-new Irish Times Weekend. With new writers like Marion Keyes and Sean Moncrief, your weekend's in good hands. Playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
If the week had ended on Monday, it would have been a pretty good week. I mean, you could listen to 7 days of audio, but by Monday, the schedule had already been stuffed with choice tidbits.
It is a beautiful day and morning in Dublin, Ireland.
For instance, Ryan Tubridy bounced onto the airwaves on Monday morning, cheeky all over.
Would you stop calling the Koipu a rat, says Julian, who is Julian Reynolds, the former head of zoology in TCD. What would you know? No one...
Ryan Tubridy from Monday morning.
He's 72 today.
Later on Monday morning, Michael emailed the programme to say that Ronan Collins had mentioned the name of a place that people thought didn't exist.
Yes, it was. In answer to a texter, it was Fran Breen on the drums on that piece called Skidoo. And Mary O'Reilly has sent me an email from Skidoo, Ballyboggle in County Dublin, says there is indeed a place called Skidoo. It's in North County Dublin between Swords and Ballyboggle near Rogenstown Golf and Country Club. So that's Skidoo. Well,
Ronan Collins proving yet again that requests are tiny entries into the almanac of Irish life. Of course, the Irish name of Skidoo is Sciachthu or Black Bush, which makes more sense. Another bit of local knowledge on RTE2XM, the alternative and indie music station, the musician Innie Kay was in talking with Dan Hegarty about her music and her upcoming tour.
It's Friday the 5th in Coughlins and Cork. You're going to be busy.
I'll be busy. There's 9 altogether. We're going, straight from Coughlins to, apparently it's Collins, they call it down in Cork.
And
then Leavis is...
Invalid children, whether they're your own or ones that you borrow from time to time.
Over on 2FM, Louise McSharry was asking about kids embarrassing you.
Terry says, my father passed away a few years ago. It was a country funeral, so very long with plenty of rosaries. In the middle of one, my son asked very loudly, is Grandad a zombie now?
Just before that on Lyric FM, Niall Carroll played a bit of John Field, the Irish pianist and composer who lived in Russia in the early 1800s and who was, clearly, racked with self-doubt.
He once declared in 1832, I play better when I am drunk than anyone in Russia plays when they are sober.
Okay, Zeno, thanks indeed. Okay. Zeno, Caddy, Mick Pender, Mick, good afternoon.
On Liveline, they were talking about the FAI and John Delaney.
I said it all along. The money probably went into the black hole at Calcutta.
And one retired FAI employee, to describe his status, used an expression from the world of carpentry.
You walk in Guinness, you get a can of beer every day. And walk in Cadbury's, you get a chance. Even the broken biscuits in Jacobs. Listen, we were only the 4x2s, as the man said.
4x2 Mick Pender on Liveline with Joe. On Sunday morning, Tom Lynch emailed playback at rte.ie to say he had just heard a great old piece of music played by Nancy Ní Chosdála on Radio na Gaeltachta's Béal Maidhne. Felix Doran agus Fiacha Ó Adarú. The Piper, Felix Doran playing The Fox Hunt and providing a running commentary throughout.
Hallyhoe now. A bugle for the dogs. The dogs on scent. Few dogs together. They'll be frightening the hens next. Now the hens.
Felix Doran with The Fox Hunt from Béal Maidhne on Radio na Gaeltachta on Sunday morning.
Days we go to a rainy night in Soho from the pen, the astute and poetic pen of Shane McGann.
Still with music, and at the other end of the day, Ruth Smith on Simply Folk on Radio 1 on Sunday night had the beguiling sound of Damien Dempsey.
I've been loving you a long time. Down all the years, down all the days,
and I've cried for all your troubles. Smile at your funny little ways. We watch the friends grow up together.
Damien Dempsey from Simply Folk on Sunday night on Radio 1. And of course, you can hear the full programme online and on the RTE radio player on your phone. Earlier on Sunday evening, the drama on one was the third place winner in the PJ O'Connor Awards, which is a competition open to members of the public. Sunday's drama was written by Paul Arthurton, a funding consultant from Belfast, and was set in his home city in the 1970s.
Right, time I was away to work.
What about your lunch?
Oh, I near forgot about it. Not in a bowl today. Right now. See yous later.
Be careful.
Bye, Da.
Bye, Da.
Bye.
What did you forget?
I'm just checking if I got my lunch.
Your lunch? It's under your arm. I think you left your head in the bed. What are you looking out the window at?
What's that noise?
Stay away from that window.
Jesus, there's thousands of them.
Thousands of what?
Thousands of them in their overalls. Some of them have hammers and iron bars and stuff.
What are you talking about? Come away from that window. Charlie, it's men from the factory. What are they doing?
I don't know. I'll just get on then.
But what about the crowd? What's happening?
It's okay. It's just a bit of nonsense that'll blow over. There's a day's work to be done. Running round the roads doesn't pay the bills. I'm away.
Good close. The drama on one from Sunday night, and the reason for the title becomes distressingly clear at the end of the play. A mini real-life drama provided a story in one of the new programmes on Radio 1 on Sunday night. This was Six Dads, a look at fatherhood from the point of view of six new fathers. In it, Barry told how he came to decide that he wanted to be a father.
I was actually in the pavilion in Swords, and it was one of those small moments. I was walking by and there was a woman basically trying to get her child's attention. And she's like, come on, James, come on. And the child was looking at something in the window, and, you know, miles away. And the more she called the child, she wasn't getting anywhere. And then she said, come on, we have to get Daddy his Christmas present. And the child's face just lit up and ran towards his mother and Israel. And it just stuck with me for a couple of days. It just was, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And then I was thinking more and more about other things and, you know, shopping together, getting ice cream, just little moments, and it just stayed with me, and yeah, it won out in the end.
From the first episode of Six Dads on Sunday night on Radio 1, the first episode of the poetry programme featured a short poem that was perfectly in tune with the weather this week.
Spring moves north at 2 miles an hour, and I travel south, stopping at inns along the way. In Charleroi, an old man asked me where I was going, and I told him I was chasing the spring. I hope to catch her a little south of Lucerne, I said. He nodded and went back to his all-day stare. I spent days cycling down through the poppy fields of Belgium.
Lawrence O'Dwyer reading Belgium from the poetry programme on Sunday night on Radio 1. At the same time, over on Lyric FM, John Kelly was talking to actress Eileen Walsh.
Well, I immediately say actor.
Right.
And then I was auditioning once for Mike Lee, and he said, so, you know, tell me about yourself. And I said, well, my sister's also an actress. And he said, oh, see what you did there? She's an actress, but you're an actor. I was like, oh, I didn't think I was that much of, oh, God.
She told him about her childhood home in Cork.
Our house was opposite Murphy's Evergreen Bacon Factory. So pig slaughterhouse.
Really?
Yeah.
Did that haunt your childhood?
Yeah. But like in a very positive way, if pig slaughterhouse could be, you know, positive. I remember our bedroom window looking over the massive green gate, and every day you would hear all the little bonnives screeching. Oh. And then by midday, silence. And then the lads would come out in their white butcher coats covered in blood for their fag. And wave across over the green metal gate that, because you'd be hanging out the window waving at them.
Eileen described some of her early acting classes.
It was always about death and dying and that bleeding into pianos. That was another great theme of mine. Great.
Okay.
Yeah. And then one day a different, a kind of a sub teacher came in and had us do washing machines. I mean, I was like, that's not drama. Drama's AIDS and all that. And then I laughed so much with being a washing machine. And I thought, oh my God, there's a whole lighter side that you forget about.
So you had to pretend to be a washing machine?
Yeah.
Spin cycle.
Spin cyclists were just jumped on the floor, basically. There was a lot of that.
She talked about naming her children.
Ethel was born. I thought, oh my God, I don't know where this name has come from. This is a beautiful old granny name. She must be called Ethel. And then we went home, and a couple of days later or whatever, I was up and I was opening the curtains of the flat, and I noticed that we lived directly across the road from South London's biggest housing estate. That's called the Ethel Brewer Housing Estate.
There we are.
So poor Tippy's called after the actor, and Ethel's called after a housing estate in South London.
Terrific.
Thankfully, there's also an Ethel Merman that we refer to.
And then she told a story about stage fright that would leave your palms sweating.
I had a panic attack on stage, which is the most awful thing.
What? How did that manifest itself? What happened?
So Disco Pigs was monologue. And then there'd be scenes together of madness. And so I was standing over by the edge of the pig pen. Kill was talking. And then I knew his monologue was coming to an end, and I had to turn in and begin mine. And I was about to get into the fight or something like that. I knew I had to get to the fight, but I couldn't remember the starting line. And so as Killian was talking, it makes me feel sick even thinking about it, I could feel pins and needles in my face and my heart beating so fast because the line wasn't coming, you're not going to think. And I remember thinking, just walk off, don't embarrass yourself because you're just going to turn around and throw up. I don't know what I was going to do. And I turned around and something came out. I don't know what it was, but the monologue started.
Actor Eileen Walsh with John Kelly on Lyric FM on Sunday night. Earlier on Sunday, Marion Finucane and the unavoidable Brexit.
Can I come to you on?
I think we got to weigh this up and say there's one country leaving.
Now, I must say here that there's so much Brexit chat around that you can get a bit addled.
The extension of Article 50. Oh, they are.
Here's a good example. If you're listening back to Marion Finucane talking about the news on Sunday morning of a palace coup against Theresa May.
Cabinet told to oust May. That's on their front page.
And then if you flick over to RTE Junior, the children's channel, Sophie Dobson is reading a story and it sounds eerily relevant.
Sometimes wishes and dreams can come true if we are truly wishing for what is best for us.
The Observer says Tory MPs plot May's downfall.
As you say goodbye to your new friends, they tell you that you can come back and visit them anytime you want.
And in the Sunday Times, British cabinet coup set to ditch May.
You wave goodbye as your carpet slowly flies up over the rainbow, up into the sky.
Her last allies battle for her survival.
Your heart feels warm and happy to have met these kind and friendly people.
Emergency premier.
And as your magic carpet lands gently on the ground, you think about the lovely adventures you had with them.
And we will get to those later on because clearly...
Brexit popped up on The Business on Radio 1 on Saturday morning, but in an unlikely way for that programme. Richard Curran's guests were comedians Alison Spittle and Seamus O'Rourke.
A fella turned to me the other night, we were discussing Brexit, and he says, I'll take out your backstop and I'll bait you over the head with it. So none of us know what any of these terms mean, but we just keep...
And of course it's a divorce as well, is the other thing. It's constantly referred to as...
Yes, it's supposed to be a difficult divorce, but any divorce I've ever heard of, the first thing is the people stop living with each other and they stop sleeping in the one bed and they stop all the other things, and that doesn't seem to have happened. We're still getting an odd nudge in the back from from Britain.
But I remember when I was a kid, I had the choice of getting an Irish or a British passport, and they showed me the passports. There was no difference to my parents. There was no political issue at that time. You know, it was the late 90s, early 2000s. And if you show a child a passport with a harp on it and then a passport with a unicorn and a lion, like, the child is going to pick the unicorn and the lion. I had no idea about history at that point, you know. So I deeply regret that. I woke up that morning of Brexit and I was like, look what the British have after doing. And then about 2 hours later, when I fully woke up, I was like, oh no, I have a British passport. What am I going to do?
Alison Spittle and Seamus O'Rourke on the business. The word most associated with Brexit among the business community is, of course, uncertainty. Earlier in the business programme, Jerry Kennelly spoke about his parents' photography business in Kerry, which was built on uncertainty.
So my parents both drove Volkswagens in the 50s and 60s, and they would travel to every town and village in Ireland.
Beatles, sir.
Volkswagen Beatles, yeah. And so they would take pictures of the churches and the streets and the local monuments, and they would create real photo postcards in the basement of our home in Tralee. So we had maybe 10 or 15 people working there.
They were constantly diversifying, and they were regularly up against it.
My father got into hock to buy all this equipment, this printing equipment, and we got a bit of a knockout punch because this flooding started and all of the equipment was destroyed several times, and we were almost put out of business.
Jerry's parents were always on the lookout for an opportunity.
It seems as if maybe yourself and some of your siblings were like props in all kinds of circumstances. There's one here of what looks like an unexploded bomb on a beach in Kerry, and yourself and your brother, a young fella, standing in beside it. Did he tell you to get in?
Absolutely. We knew what was going to make a picture, so the thing is, and every picture, every story would be shot for both stills and for TV. So we would walk at the scene and look at this bomb and hope to God it didn't blow up on us.
Businessman Jerry Kennelly talking about the origins of his own entrepreneurial skills from The Business on Saturday morning.
That was totally alien to me.
Earlier in the morning, another story of blind perseverance from Countrywide, when Brenda Donoghue spoke to farmer Ted Horgan. Ted realised he had a problem when his newborn son was put into his arms.
I had difficulty actually holding him in the correct position to protect his head from falling back.
Ted went with his baby for his 3-week checkup, and he told the doctor of his own difficulties with his limbs. He was sent to a consultant.
I attended the doctor, the consultant, on my own because Ernie was at home with our young child, and I faced the difficulty of going home and telling my wife that I had Parkinson's. And her reaction was, thank God it's not cancer or something terminal. So that evening, after my dinner, I set off counting cattle. That night, I decided that there was no point in letting this condition get the better of me. There was no point in going down the negative route. The only chance I'd have to be a good father to my children would be to meet it head on and let me take control of Parkinson's rather than Parkinson's controlling me. I'm still able to walk around. I'm still able to kick a ball with my children. I'm still able to maintain the farmyard to some extent. I'm living with Parkinson's and I'm suffering from optimism.
Farmer Ted Horgan from Countrywide on Saturday morning.
It's been a big week for the old.
The old what?
Old, the elderly.
Old oh, thing. The old people.
Huge week for elderly.
Over on 2FM, Anton Savage was in with Dave Fanning, giggling through the offbeat stories of the week.
A 104-year-old woman has ticked off another item on her bucket list after she was arrested by police in the UK. This is rooted in what is actually quite a nice idea, I think. There's an old folks' home in Bristol. And one of the things they do is they go to all the older people. They go to them and say, what would you like? You know, what's your bucket list? And she said, and she wrote down, my wish is to be arrested. I am 104 and I have never been on the wrong side of the law.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think she had to commit a crime. I think they wrote to the local police office.
Would you come in and arrest her?
Yeah.
Handcuffs, yeah.
Well, bear with me. Oh. This woman is, according to reports, she has dementia. She seems to be relatively compos-mensis, but she does have dementia. What the police said was, she did come very quietly and she wanted to be handcuffed, so we very gently applied the handcuffs and escorted her down to the police car. Here's the important bit. She was surprised to see us. I don't think she could remember at first that she wanted to be arrested, but when she saw us and the handcuffs were coming out, she went along with it then. She didn't resist or anything. She's 104.
She didn't resist.
Like, what resistance were you expecting?
Can't be too sure.
So there you go. That's her. And history doesn't recount what her next bucket list thing is. But meanwhile,
to kick it.
And still on 2FM, and what has to be the quiz question of the week.
Okay, so Andrew, if you get this one right, you've
This
won.
Is still only Monday, and it's from the Louise McSherry Show, where they have a new quiz with completely random questions, where the listener has to guess the answer, yes or no, or in this case, yay or nay.
A takeaway of beef chow mein from the Lantern Chinese restaurant in Ballina, County Mayo, will cost you €9.70. Yay or nay?
Was it yay or nay? Find out after the break, and I bet you can't wait.
Playback on RT Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories, and engrossing sports coverage.
A takeaway of beef chow mein from the Lantern Chinese restaurant in Ballina, County Mayo, will cost you €9.70. Yay or nay?
Nay.
And the answer is...
Nay!
Congratulations, Andrew. You are our winner. The takeaway is actually €8.70. Still expensive, I would say.
From the Louise McSherry Show on 2FM on Monday. And if you're a fan of deep trivia, you would have been in your element during drive time on Wednesday.
If people tried to knock them down, I think there would be a revolution in the city. Because
the programme started with a discussion with Harry Crosby, the developer, on what to do with the Poolbeg chimneys. These are the two huge chimneys at the entrance to Dublin Port, which are visible from around the city.
I have done a lot of development in big infrastructure.
Harry Crosby reckons he can make a tourist attraction from the chimneys.
There could be a glass tube elevator going up the full, I think they're 650 feet.
That would be impossible from my understanding of the design.
Later in the programme, though, Michael Hanley, an engineer who worked on the building of the second chimney, said that Harry Crosby's plan wouldn't work.
Because wind is the biggest factor when you're designing a chimney. A chimney is a cantilever sticking up in the air. And the movement at the top is designed to sort of a foot to 15 inches on either side of. So you're talking 2 feet sway at the top. And if you increase that with a lift, it simply is not on.
In the course of his interview with Fergal Keane, the engineer said that he brought a bit of artistic license to his work.
Let you in on a little secret. I was a bit of a devil when I was doing the drawings. The second one was supposed to be the same size as the first one. And I decided I wanted to mark it, and I made it, I think it's 8 inches taller than the first one. That's my mark on the chimney.
A definite pub quiz question right there. Engineer Mark Handley from Drive Time on Wednesday.
Now they're starting to inch their way forward as Georgia have the ball in their own hands.
And then there was the sweet relief of Tuesday night.
20 minutes gone, 0-0. Glenn Whelan has the ball on the halfway line.
The Ireland soccer team versus Georgia in Dublin.
Gets the ball into the penalty area, just over the head of Robbie Brady, but it's still...
John Kenny and Kenny Cunningham were in the commentary box, and there were a bunch of fine experts in the 2FM studio, but the man who painted one of the best pictures of the match was actually on the field.
Out to Coleman, the Irish captain. 50th cap against Gibraltar.
Seamus Coleman. He spoke to Tony O'Donoghue on Morning Ireland on Wednesday.
As I said, we tried to win the ball high up and...
Here's McLean.
You know, not sit back and not give them too much respect.
Out on the left-hand side.
I thought we did that great at times, you know, we linked up well.
Lovely interplay. And Brady...
We're in control of the ball and thought the crowd were brilliant with us as well.
A cheer, a roar from the crowd looking for...
That's what happens here at the Viva. One or two crosses across the box and they get right behind you.
McLean again. McLean left-footed into the penalty area. Tries to pick out McGoldrick. We have tennis balls raining onto the Aviva Stadium.
Were you worried at all that that might affect the momentum of the game?
At the time, yeah. You kind of were worried that it might slow the game down.
A few shops around the ground were actually selling tennis balls.
Quick cutaway here to Breakfast Republic on 2FM, where Keith Walsh explained the whole tennis ball thing to Lottie Ryan.
I think it was at the 33rd minute because there was a story about John Delaney and he had suggested to FIFA that Ireland... Do you remember the France handball incident? Ireland missed out on going through to the World Cup. And around that time, John Delaney decided to go to FIFA and say, could Ireland be the 33rd team in the competition? And everybody laughed.
Oh.
And so they threw tennis balls onto the pitch in the 33rd minute as a protest.
Oh.
So that's why that happened.
A peaceful protest.
I could have made all that up, Lottie.
RTE Sport needs more Lottie Ryan.
Oh.
Free kick. 35 minutes in. Remains at 0-0.
Seamus Coleman says the tennis balls on the pitch didn't really throw them.
As soon as that happened, they got right behind us. Like there was a roar, I'm sure you heard it.
Yeah, it's got to be a free kick for Ireland as the noise level goes up. Harahan has not scored in his previous nine internationals. It'd be a good time to score.
And if ever a commentator's timing was spot on, it was John Kenny's. Good commentators say you have to know when to shut up. And John Kenny did that just at the right moment.
So it's Harahan going to take it now. Harahan! What a finish! His first goal for Ireland.
Then Connor put the ball in the back of the net. It was brilliant.
And the goalkeeper, no chance. 35 minutes in. A beautiful free kick around the wall with a big bend.
Ireland versus Georgia on 2FM on Tuesday night with John Kenny commentating and Seamus Coleman, the Irish captain on Morning Ireland on Wednesday morning, providing the post-match analysis. Morning Ireland featured in some of the most memorable introductions of the week. They're known as intros in the audio business. They're the bits of a programme or an interview that are right at the top, where the programme or interviewee are introduced. On Wednesday morning, Rachel English on Morning Ireland snapped the nation to attention with her introduction.
Good morning. It's 7 o'clock on... better if I have the introduction. Good morning. It's 7 o'clock on Wednesday, the 27th of March on RTE Radio.
Rachel keeping us on our toes on Morning Ireland on Wednesday morning. On Tuesday night on Arena, the arts programme on Radio 1, Sean Rocks was getting ready to do an interview about a new series of the television programme Line of Duty. The interview was so circumscribed that Sean's frustration spilled over into his intro.
Police force Mary McGill has watched the first episode and she joins me now from Galway to review it. You know, Mary, I was looking at the list of things we're not allowed to say that we got from the BBC. And I guess what it says, so you've watched the first episode. Thanks very much for joining us. Bye-bye, Mary.
Yeah, essentially that.
From Arena on Tuesday evening at 7 on Radio 1. And on Ray Darcy's programme on Radio 1, he asked this question as part of his intro to an interview.
So you're sitting there in front of me breathing away with somebody else's lungs. That's the crux of it, yeah. That's it, not a bother me, yeah.
Ray was talking to David Crosby, who's a marathon runner and the recipient of a lung transplant. And marathons are a big thing for David and his family.
My mum did a marathon or two before, half marathons then Dingle, and she loves the one in Dingle, but... She said it was her last, but I knew looking in her eyes that she'd like to be there when I was doing this. So I asked her one day, would she like to do it? And she says, yes. So she came and did it with me. Yeah. I let her beat me.
That's very nice.
I let most of them beat me.
Do you look at life differently now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't turn the news on for months. Like, you know, it wasn't important. It was all ISIS and stuff like that. And it just didn't come into my head. Life is too precious. And it's too important.
And what about the children? Did they know what you were
going
through?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Myself and Katie, we sat down, we talked about it, and we said, we're going to tell them the truth. You know, we weren't going to lie to them. They wouldn't trust us later on, like, you know. So we told them in their language what was going to happen, that daddy has, you know, a bit sick, he's going to get fixed, he's going to be strong. And yeah, we told them. And actually 4 months after my transfer, my oldest daughter Kira, she's lovely auburn hair way down her back, and she wanted to cut it off. And of course the aunties, and we says, no, you can't cut that hair, it's lovely. But she was determined, and she cut it off, and she donated her hair to Bernardo's to make a wig for children with cancer.
Ah,
and stuff,
great.
So there was a good outcome of that. My son Dara, after transplant, when I talked to him, when they took the oxygen off me about 4 days after, he went. I was talking on the phone, and the next thing, the phone went dead, and he went running, and he got the machines and put them into the garage. Yeah. And Erin, sure, all she wanted to do is cuddle me, and she's a big.
So he put the oxygen into the garage because Daddy wouldn't need it.
Daddy wouldn't need it anymore. Yes. You know, so.
David Crosby in studio with Ray Darcy on Radio 1 on Monday. And while it's powerful to hear a story like that told in an interview, there's also a quiet power in a human story told in a restrained way and at a remove. For example, a regular on Today with Sean O'Rourke is barrister Tim Bracken, who's an expert on wills. Now, the world of the law around wills, as told by a barrister, promises to be pretty dry radio. But when he's answering listeners' questions, all sorts of scenes and scenarios swirl around in your mind. Take this one as read by Sean, for example.
I'm thinking about signing over my farm to my son. My husband died 5 years ago, so while everything is in my name, my son works the land. My relationship with my daughter-in-law is not great. I'm afraid that I might lose my place in the home if I sign everything over. Is there a way to protect myself so that they can't kick me out if I sign things over?
Well, we spoke about this before, and I mentioned King Lear, who ended up out in the Heath when he gave his kingdom to his daughters. The minute that happened. I mean, that can happen because you lose the ownership. She could protect herself by maybe holding on to her house and putting into the deed that there's a right of support and maintenance. But once you transfer the land over, it's no longer yours. So therefore, if relationships sour, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. So I would advise that what she should do is she should try and maybe retain the farmhouse and an acre around it, and also a cast iron agreement that she'd be paid so much per month to support her.
You're imagining how the two women behave when they meet, and you're thinking about what an acre around a farm looks like. Barrister Tim Bracken from Today with Sean O'Rourke, and from the same programme, More Law, and again, dispassion suggesting terrible angst. This is from Evelyn O'Rourke's report after 2 days in the family law courts.
Interestingly, I saw two applications for safety orders by daughters against their mothers in just one day. And in both cases, the daughters were young women, and in both cases, the mothers did not turn up to court to respond to the applications. Now, Judge Keane was hearing the cases here. And in this first situation, the daughter told the court that her mother is an alcoholic and has caused chaos in her life for years. And she said that she was looking for a safety order against the mother because her behaviour is so bad at this stage that she fears for her safety.
Right. And in this case, Judge Keane asked the woman to describe her mother's behaviour. And what did she have to say to the court?
Well, she said that the mother's dependency on drink has led to her being physically abusive to her, and that she's been abusive to her and her little sisters, and that she has neglected them over the years. And the HSC, there was reference made that they've been involved too. But she told the court that she's been living at home, or had been living at home until last week, when she was, as she put it, kicked out. And she's now staying with a friend, but it's not a long-term solution. Now, Judge Keane obviously questioned her about this, and she established that, you know, she is over 18. And she said to her, look, the situation here now is that you're in full-time work. You are not a student. You're over 18. So you are technically a guest in your mother's home. That property is owned by her and you do not have a legal entitlement to be there. And then she said, are you in fear of her? And the woman said, yes. And she said the mother had beaten her on occasion since Christmas. There have been several incidents. She says she hits her. She throws household objects at her, like drawers, and that she's hurt the other children too. And she also said, I haven't moved out before because I wanted to protect my younger sister. Siblings. I wanted to feed them, make sure they got to school so they didn't have the childhood that I had.
So the judge's decision?
She said that after listening to her evidence, she was satisfied that she had met the threshold for the order, so she was granting her a safety order for 1 year.
Evelyn O'Rourke from the Family Law Courts on Today with Sean O'Rourke. And perhaps the most poignant example of the impact of a restrained telling came in the news on Wednesday morning on Morning Ireland. The previous day, the news told of the death of a new mother in a Cork hospital. She had collapsed and died in her room, falling on top of her new baby. The baby was still alive, but critical. On Wednesday morning at 7, Brian Jennings read this at the end of the Morning Ireland Bulletin.
A newborn baby boy who was found underneath his dead mother on the floor of her single room in Cork University Maternity Hospital has died. The mother and her newborn were found just before 8 o'clock on Monday morning by medical staff on their ward rounds.
We later learned that the mother was named Marie Downey and her new son was named Dara. Brian Jennings from Morning Ireland on Wednesday. The Irish Chamber Choir with Remember My Heart, Merk auf mein Herz by Johann Christoph Bach. And that was from Vox Nostra on Lyric FM on Sunday morning.
Playback on RT Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
Okay, so you know that thing I said at the beginning about it being all right if the week ended on a Monday? Well, forget that, because if it had, we would have missed an astonishing clip played on Today with Sean O'Rourke this morning.
It's being described as the TV political moment of the year.
It was just before an interview about Brexit with a BBC journalist from Brussels, Adam Fleming.
Well, there's somebody in this room who's very jealous that Nick Watt got such a juicy quote.
Nicholas Watt was reporting into BBC Newsnight last night on conversations he'd had in Westminster about Theresa May.
Now, in Cabinet, I am picking up complete and utter despair. I said to one Cabinet Minister, why is the Prime Minister holding a vote when she's pretty sure that she's going to lose? And using very strong language, this Cabinet Minister said to me, "F*** knows, I'm past caring, it's like the living dead in here."
Oh, God.
This Cabinet Minister then went on to say, "Theresa May is the sole architect of this mess. It is her inability to engage in the most basic human interactions that brought us here. Cabinet has totally broken down. Ministers say their bit, she gives nothing away. One side thinks X will happen, the other side think Y will happen, and the Prime Minister decides on Z."
Nicholas Watt of the BBC, as heard in a clip played on Today with Sean O'Rourke this morning. It was from BBC Newsnight last night. And of course, one of the complaints about Brexit in Britain is that the media are spending so much time talking about it, they aren't focusing on other issues. That's not so much the case here, it seems. This week, two major issues affecting us got plenty of airing. One was climate collapse. There was a time when environmentalists were seen as alarmist, akin to sandwich board men with the message, "The end is nigh." Now, of course, climate breakdown is part of the mainstream news agenda. This week, three separate reports were in the news. The World Meteorological Organization says that the physical and economic impacts of climate breakdown are accelerating. Chagosk announced that dairy farms produce three times more emissions than other farming sectors.
"We're unique in European terms, in our reliance on pasture-based agriculture, which means livestock agriculture."
Professor Gerry Boyle of Chagosk was on Morning Ireland. He said that small changes can be made in the sector, but Irish agriculture cannot make a major shift.
"Our lands are not suitable for widespread adoption of horticulture or cereal crops, for example. We need, obviously, to change the way in which we farm. But I think the idea that horticulture is going to be an opportunity that can be exploited, I would have thought that very unlikely."
Such a shift was proposed in the Oireachtas Climate Change Committee report, which was due to be published yesterday. They also proposed increases in carbon tax.
"And it is amazing to see this report. I was an environment correspondent for 10 years.
On Wednesday night, on Late Debate with Katie Hannan, RTE political correspondent Paul Cunningham talked about his time as environment correspondent and what change a report like the Oireachtas one represents.
"And it is really, really interesting to see the extent to which this country has travelled in its vision about how they're going to deal with climate change and tackle with it. On this particular one, I'd be confident that there is going to be some form of compromise found, because I think whoever stands outside this and walks away from it, I think is going to be in a very lonely political place."
"That may well be me. I don't know yet, because I don't know what Fianna Fáil are going to do. And I'm not clear where Fianna Gael are going with it. But I'm really tired."
"Well, we're
of
very clear.
I'm really
we're
tired
very
of the
clear,
way they're playing,
our proposal is very clear today."
That's Breed Smith TD and Fine Gael Senator Tim Lombard.
"When you say it may be me, you're saying you might not sign up to this.
I may
report.
Not sign up to this. And
if you want to get an idea of the different agendas and the level of compromise that's needed to get such a report agreed upon, Late Debate on Wednesday night is instructive.
Good morning.
You describe these figures, and I don't think anybody would disagree with you, as hugely disappointing. But then you go on to perhaps rather bizarrely claim that your policy is working.
Another issue in the news this week was the latest homeless figures. They've exceeded 10,000. The minister responsible for housing, Owen Murphy, was on Morning Ireland.
"Well, Brian, it is hugely disappointing."
And campaigner Father Peter McFerry was on today with Sean O'Rourke.
"The actual number of homeless people is probably closer to 15,000 than to 10,000.
They both agreed on one thing. The actual figures don't tell the whole story.
Well, you're the one who questioned my figures. Yeah, how many houses did Dublin City Council build directly itself last year?
It's about 1,700 homes from the different delivery streams
directly
that we had
itself
in Dublin, across the local authorities and across the different streams. But you're making a false distinction there, because every one of these homes delivered is a social housing home and it takes someone off a housing list.
Is it incorrect that there were 74 social houses built directly last year by Dublin City Council? Am I wrong in that?
What you're not including in that is the number of homes that would have come in by Part 5 into the local authority area, the number of turnkeys where we went to a developer where they had land.
What's important about the figures is not the absolute number, but it's the trend. And the trend is just going up and up and up almost every month, with the exception often of December, because landlords don't throw people out in December because they can't replace them.
We can't just say, unfortunately, that if someone is going to sell their home, and that they have to keep the tenants in place. Of course, if you have a lease arrangement with a tenant. You have to respect the lease arrangement. And we have laws in terms of the amount of notice that you have to give someone before they have to leave. And we're going to lengthen those laws.
Yeah, but a landlord is not selling their home. They're selling an investment property.
Yes, but you can imagine a situation where a landlord has to sell that investment property because they have debts to repay, because maybe they were in negative equity in the very recent history. The fact that they would be selling with tenants in situ would mean that the property would devalue by between 20 and 30% potentially. So you could actually be putting them in a very difficult financial position, maybe even into bankruptcy.
So the priority for the government then is to protect the landlords rather than the tenants.
No, the point, Brian, is that in trying to help one person, you'd be hurting someone else. And we need landlords. The difficulty that we face at the moment is that we're losing landlords from the sector. And as a result, people are finding themselves in housing insecurity and are presenting to emergency.
The government is clearly on the side of the banks, the side of the vulture funds, and on the side of the property owners, very clearly. What I would be calling for is a moratorium on evictions for 3 years, just 3 years, until we get to grips with this problem. Now,
Father Peter McVerry with Sean O'Rourke and Minister Owen Murphy with Brian Dobson on Morning Ireland on Thursday morning.
All right, then. We have the finals in Croke Park and obviously a huge Leitrim crowd travelling for the Division 4 final against...
This morning on Morning Ireland, Des Cahill previewed the weekend's GAA football with Tomás O'Shea.
Well, yeah, Des, look, last year they had a narrow loss to Monaghan and I think it gave them that bit of confidence. They're a footballing mad county, Des. I mean, I had an uncle who won a county intermediate with Aoha Willin in 1966 and people from Leitrim constantly remind me of that.
1966? Sure, that's nothing to this lad.
But in the Munster final in 1943, Cadbury said Jim Ware was driving those balls within 21 yards of the Cork corner. Really, the value over Rockhorn Cottle to stood between the DC and the...
He's Andy Allen in a piece from the RTE Radio Archives that popped up on Radio 1 Extra this week. It's from 1977 and reporter Donnacha O'Dooling is with a crowd of people in the Wicklow village of Ockram talking to local man Andy, otherwise known as Memory Man.
Let's take the year 1941, which wasn't yesterday, the day before.
That's right, Cork.
Who won the All-Ireland Hurling that
year? Cork.
Now, could you go through the Cork team?
I could. In the goal was Jim Buttermer of the Bears. Right cornerback was William Murphy, Baden College. Fullback was the late Pat Turnbull, the Buttermer. And left fullback was Adam Lottie of the Sarsfield. The right corner forward was John Quirk of Blackrock. Full forward was the late Ted Sullivan of Middleton, or Blackrock, Baden the Court, I think, outside of Middleton. And the left corner forward was Mitchell Brennan.
Now, do you know
what? Or that football tennis. I was in the Kerry dressing room there.
I have to ask the parish priest a personal question about you. You must be a great man in confession. Huh? Are you good for remembering sins?
I wouldn't.
Memory man Andy Allen from the Highways and Byways programme, retrieved from the RTE Radio Archives and played on RTE Radio 1 Extra this week. And then there was another issue that provoked national discussion. It was brought to light courtesy of a man named Steve O'Rourke. Chris and Kira on 2FM spotted the story.
Steve has caused absolute mayhem on Irish Twitter with the following. We were just chatting in work, and apparently it's weird that Amy and I, who's presuming is his partner, don't sleep on the same side of the bed every night. Some nights I like to sleep by the window, some nights the door. It's not really that unusual, is it? Steve, let me tell you something. You are a monster, okay? You are this...
He's had enough abuse online, okay? He's had enough abuse online. But spark a huge conversation. Everyone was like, what are you trying to say? You're absolutely Looney Tune.
Someone said, I'm lost for words. You should be on a list.
You should be on a list. So Philip Boucher-Hayes, he said, I thought I was a tolerant and progressive sort, but you have found my limit. A stone-throwing mob needs to run you and Amy far beyond the city walls before it spreads. So there you go. Philip Boucher-Hayes has weighed in on this on Twitter.
Sorry, that is such a Philip Boucher-Hayes tweet as well. Oh my goodness.
90% have told us we're either like aliens or, you know, we're not human because it just...
And then the bowel Steve appeared on Ray Darcy to explain himself.
We don't have a spreadsheet or anything, you know, to decide who's got where, but essentially it's the first person in gets to choose their side that they want and the second person in doesn't complain. If we go to bed at the same time, which is fairly regular, you tend to drift towards the side you slept on the night before.
Let me go one step further with you. When we're like at home at the home house, like with my parents and stuff, right? and we have guests over, or like it's Christmas and like relatives are over, if they sit at my place at the table, I actually say to them, whoever it is, I'm like, that's where I sit.
Yeah.
As like a grown man, not mm-hmm. like as a 4-year-old. I'm as a grown man, I'm like, that's, and like, I'm so
that's
awkward in doing
seat.
It.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that's where I sit. And they're like, what?
The vast, vast majority of people have a side, and they have a mug that they drink tea out of, and all of these, even favourite hobs, you know, favourite rings on the hobs people have. It's
right.
Unreal what people get up to.
Well, what Steve gets up to when he makes tea really got Ray worked up.
Tea bag, milk, water, and then, yeah, that order.
Hold on. You put a tea bag into a cup and then you add milk.
Because I know exactly then the amount of milk I want to put into it.
Ah, no, that's more controversial. That's I've never heard anybody in my life do that. But you're
really?
But you're the whole process.
I think we'll leave it there. Steve O'Rourke on with Ray D'Arcy on Radio 1 and mentioned on Chris and Kira on 2FM. He writes for the sports news website The 42. No mention of how Amy felt about their bedroom being part of a national discussion. On Mooney Goes Wild on Monday night, Derek Mooney was talking to a reporter from Norway about whales dying from ingesting plastic. Before they finished their conversation, the reporter, Helge Sufteland, told Derek about a new restaurant that's opened in Norway, which is underwater.
It's cost 10 million euros to build. It seats 40 people. It opened a few days ago. And there is a 6-month waiting list if you were sort of booking flights from Norway, Derek and Richard. You should wait a little bit. And they serve, of course, seafood, as in S-E-A food, but also seafood, S-E-E, because you see your food outside your table. Very nice.
So what does it look like? Paint a picture of it for me.
Yeah, you come to sort of normal Norwegian coastline and you walk down a paved opening into the ocean. And you really go straight down into an undersea bunker almost. And you have the whole ocean opening up 360 degrees in front.
Where exactly is it in Norway?
It's in Lindesnes, which is the southernmost tip of Norway. And it would cost you 120 euros to book, 180 to eat, 18-course meal. And you would probably need to spend a little bit more on a tuxedo and a Ferrari to get you there, because it's high class. And the day before it opened, wealthy, secret Norwegian paid 15,000 euros to dine there with his, the woman of his dreams. So, yeah, endless possibilities.
Norwegian reporter Helge Sufteland on Mooney Goes Wild from Monday night on Radio 1 at 10. And there are great photos on the Mooney programme website of the restaurant. And then Back Home, a brand new song on RTE Junior, the children's channel. It was heard on The Weekend Club and presenter Jamie Maguire spoke to the performers.
I'm Isabel Pearl and I'm 13.
And my name is Heather Pearl and I am 10.
Okay, and is there any song in the charts at the moment, or any artists in particular that you're both really digging at the moment?
I really like 80s music at the moment.
And do you have a favourite 80s singer?
I don't have a favourite, but I like The Smiths and The Cure.
You like The Smiths?
Yeah.
And what's your favourite Smith song?
Oh, I don't know, This Charming Man.
This Charming Man, that's my favourite song too. Very good.
And I like Stoat, which is Dad's band, and I like Macklemore, you probably heard of him, and I like OMFG, which is a band that sounds like a constipated duck.
A constipated duck?
Yeah.
How do you explain that one? Both of you have recently recorded a song with your dad called I Don't Want to Go to Bed. What can you tell me about this?
I think it's very relatable for everybody not wanting to go to bed.
Grown-ups.
Yeah. And I think it's just a fun song and it was just really fun to make. So
when your parents tell you to go to bed, do you sing this to them every night now, I suppose?
No. Not really. But thanks for giving us the idea. So many chores.
the Pearl Sisters with their song I Don't Want to Go to Bed on RTE Junior's Weekend Club. That's it for this week. Back again next weekend with the playback podcast at 4:30 on Friday afternoon and the broadcast on Saturday morning on Radio 1 at 10 past 9. In the meantime, if you hear anything good on RTE radio and audio services that you think we should share, let us know by email to playback@rte.ie. Slán.